Greetings, this is podcast number 26 of Blast the Right. I'm Jack Clark from therationalradical.com, www.therationalradical.com. Today we have two additional installments of my ever-continuing series, The 4,978 Ways Right-Wingers Kill, Kill the Innocent, Kill the Defenseless. The first additional way we'll discuss is right-wingers killing 911 workers by concealing the truth from them about the environmental poisons they're being exposed to. The second additional way we'll talk about is right-wingers pulling the plug on impoverished patients on life support, even if the patient wants to continue on life support. Yes, this story will make your hair stand on end. It did mine. Let's get right into the first segment. The right wing kills people by their cavalier disregard of even potentially fatal environmental dangers. Here we'll talk about how this has even happened in connection with 911. The headline of a recent news story read, "Retired Detective's Death Attributed to 911 Duty." Here's what the article said, quote, "A detective who retired from the New York Police Department in 2004 because of illness related to September 11th died last week," a union official said yesterday. Close quote. The detective's name was James Zadroga. He was 34 years old and was with an elite Manhattan homicide unit. He died of pulmonary disease. All this is according to Michael J. Palladino, president of the union, the Detectives Endowment Association. The article goes on, quote, "He was in Building 7 when it collapsed, and he narrowly escaped death," Mr. Palladino said. "For the next month, he worked 12 or 13 hours a day, a total of more than 450 hours in the rescue and recovery effort." Soon afterwards, Detective Zadroga complained of shortness of breath and was found to have fiberglass in his lungs, Mr. Palladino said. Detective Zadroga suffered from other health problems, including mercury in his brain. Mr. Zadroga is the first emergency responder to die of a related illness, Mr. Palladino said. End of article excerpt. Now, is this a one-time fluke? This guy just got unlucky? I don't think so. If you'll recall, there's long been an outcry that the Bush administration downplayed health risks to those in the area of the World Trade Center. Congressman Gerald Nadler, a Democrat, represents that area. Let me read to you a bit from a press release of his from a couple of years ago. Quote, "Congressman Gerald Nadler made the following statement after a recent report that the White House instructed EPA officials to downplay air quality concerns in New York City after the terrorist attacks of September 11th. The Bush White House's so-called credibility gap widened further this week, as the New York Times reported that an internal Environmental Protection Agency watchdog found that the White House instructed the EPA to downplay post-911 air quality and public health concerns in New York City. A leaked section of a report by the EPA's Inspector General's office confirms what I have documented and many New Yorkers have known since September 2001. The EPA misled us when it gave assurances about air quality after the collapse of the World Trade Center towers. We knew that when then EPA Administrator Christine Todd Whitman announced to New Yorkers shortly after the attacks that the air is safe to breathe and that we need not be concerned about environmental issues as we return to our homes and workplaces, that she didn't have the information to support those assurances or make recommendations," close quote. But as Nadler's press release goes on, it gets even worse. Quote, "The report also documents how the White House itself, through its Council on Environmental Quality, actually manipulated the statements being released by the EPA so as to soft-pedal health concerns. The report alleges that it did this because of, quote, competing considerations such as national security and the desire to reopen Wall Street, close quote. In doing so, the White House politicized critical environmental and public health information, thereby endangering the health and lives of New York City residents. End of Nadler press release. In other words, greed. They wanted to get Wall Street back open. The hell with the health of anyone in that area. Just so you know exactly what kind of health dangers we're talking about, this is from a document on the website of another New York City congressperson, Carolyn B. Maloney. Quote, 3 months later, fires still burned and smoldered beneath the World Trade Center wreckage, releasing high levels of benzene, an organic compound that can lead to leukemia, bone marrow damage, and other diseases after long-term exposure, as well as other toxic compounds such as dioxin. Besides this, the dust created by the initial building collapse and the debris being trucked out, most of it potentially laden with asbestos, was brought through open doors and windows, through ventilation systems and tracked in on shoes, into homes, offices, and schools in the area, close quote. And these fears are confirmed. The widespread nature of the Bushian killing was just confirmed this month by the head of a New York healthcare network. In a letter published in the New York Times, Claire Altman, president of the Highbridge Woody Crest Extended Care Network, wrote concerning the article, Retired Detective's Death Attributed to 911 Duty, the article we discussed at the beginning of this segment. She said that the article, quote, underscores a public health care crisis affecting thousands of 911 emergency responders and residents of Lower Manhattan. James Zadroga's death, caused by fiberglass in his lungs and mercury in his brain, was an avoidable tragedy. The Olive Leaf Wholeness Center, part of a nonprofit health network, found in treating 160 emergency responders and Lower Manhattan residents that 85% of those tested had lead and mercury toxicity. Treatments to remove these metals are inexpensive and easy to administer. However, because the government denies the toxic effects of the combustion of over 3,000 chemicals and metals at the World Trade Center site, treatment for these heroes of 911 is not being provided. How many deaths will it take before necessary and humane treatment for those who protect us in the wake of terrorist attacks and natural disasters is provided? Close quote. The answer, Ms. Altman, is that no number of deaths will cause the right wing to take care of those who protect us, because right wingers, despite all their verbiage to the contrary, just don't care.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again to kind of catapult the propaganda. Catapult the propaganda.
In earlier podcasts, I showed how right-wingers kill poor people by denying medical care. For example, right-wingers oppose national health insurance or any other method of providing health insurance to the 45 million Americans currently without it. That's even though a government study said 18,000 Americans die every year because of a lack of health care insurance. Another example. In podcast number 8, I discussed how our infant mortality rate is 43rd in the world. Thousands more U.S. babies would live, not die, if our infant mortality rate was as low as the best countries. Our infant mortality rate is so high because pregnant mothers aren't guaranteed health care if they can't otherwise afford it. But try to get a right winger to agree to provide such health care to pregnant women. Forget about it. Here's another way right wingers kill: pulling people off of life support against their wishes if they can't pay for it. Yes, you heard me right. Tirtahas Hatagidis was dying of cancer in a Texas hospital, Baylor Regional Medical Center in Plano, a suburb of Dallas. She was on a life support ventilator. She was a 27-year-old legal immigrant from Africa. She didn't have a lot of money and she had no health insurance. As Robert H. Frank in the New York Times wrote, quote, on December 1st, hospital authorities notified her brother that unless another hospital could be found to treat his sister, Baylor would be forced to discontinue care after 10 days. But even with Baylor's assistance, the family was unable to find a willing hospital. True to its word, Baylor disconnected her ventilator on December 12th, invoking a law signed in 1999 by George W. Bush, then governor of Texas. The law relieved doctors of an obligation to provide life-sustaining treatment 10 days after having provided formal notice that such treatment was found to be medically inappropriate. End of excerpt. The family said that Miss Hatagidis was conscious and communicating. She wanted to last to stay on the ventilator until her East African mother could reach the hospital. She wanted her mother at her bedside when she died. This is from a local TV news report.
Even though her body was being ravaged by cancer, this family says Tiet has still responded and was conscious and waiting for one person.
She wanted to get her mom over here, or for her to get to her mom so she can die in her mom's arms.
That was her cousin, Mary Tesfaye. But no, Baylor wouldn't allow that to happen. This is Ms. Hatagidis' brother, Daniel Salvi. I took her brother's audio from two different interviews. One is good sound quality, one not so, but I thought it important to hear what he had to say.
They handed me this letter on December 1st, and they said we're going to give you 10 days, right, so that at the 11th day they're going to pull it out.
It was against our will to unplug her. We never wanted that.
As Robert Frank continued in the New York Times, quote, her brother and several other family members have described the agonizing spectacle of her death by suffocation over the next 16 minutes. Close quote. How can this be possible? How could this happen? Well, when George W. Bush was governor of Texas, they passed a law to allow it to happen. The applicable section of the law is section 166.046. It's titled, Procedure If Not Effectuating a Directive or Treatment Decision. What bland language! It should be called the Kill Poor People on Life Support Despite Their or Family's Wishes provision. The statute reads in pertinent part, I've condensed it to make it intelligible, quote, if the patient or the person responsible for the healthcare decisions of the patient is requesting life-sustaining treatment that the attending physician has decided and the review process has affirmed is inappropriate treatment, the physician and the healthcare facility are not obligated to provide life-sustaining treatment after the 10th day. Close quote. The statute doesn't define what is inappropriate treatment. What it really means is treatment that the person can't afford because they don't have health insurance. The news report said this law was rarely used. Sure, it hasn't gone to hearings and the like. You know how things work. I suspect that this sad story of Tirtahas Hatagidis is just the tip of the iceberg. The family of someone on life support is distraught in an alien, sterile hospital environment. The almighty MD comes and says, "We're going to pull the plug." The unspoken part of this is, because you don't have insurance and can't pay for this care. The family objects. The doctor then tells them, "Well, you can invoke these procedures and there'll be a hearing, but I can assure you that the ethics committee will back up my decision. Let's avoid the additional trauma of putting everyone through all this." Many poor families would be cowed and agree. Indeed, one of the authors of the law in question said, quote, "My experience on 5 hospital ethics committees and as co-chair of 2 is that in both adult and pediatric cases, most futility disputes never get to this last step of unilateral withdrawal of life-sustaining treatment. In most cases, either the families drop their opposition along the way, or the patient dies before the due process steps required by the statute have been exhausted," close quote. Of course, the families drop their opposition. What power do they have against the hospital? They're poor. They have no power at all. My question is, what kind of doctors would agree to pull the plug on a conscious patient who doesn't want to die? Apparently, some Texas doctors. Of course, officials from the Baylor Regional Medical Center denied that their decision had anything to do with financial considerations. If you believe that, I have the large metal structure in an aquatic setting in the New York metropolitan area that I'd love to sell you. Unlike so many native-born Americans fooled by the right wing, this immigrant family knows the truth. Here's her brother, Daniel Salvi. His first words are a fund issue. He means a funding issue, I guess.
A fund issue, the way that I understood, because she's not insured, and that was the major reason, the way I understood it. And it's a kind of a shock for me, too, to experience this in this country, whereas it's the richest country in the world. Very sad.
If you don't have money in this country, you're nothing. You're not a human being.
If you don't have money in this country, you're nothing. You're not a human being. This man, this poor man who had just been brutalized by legislation enacted by the right-wing Bush administration, understands the right wing perfectly. This is exactly the attitude the right wing has towards the poor. Their philosophy is called social Darwinism. I discussed this at length in podcast number 20. As Robert Reich, Clinton's labor secretary, briefly summarizes it, adherence to the social Darwinism philosophy sees society as, quote, "a competitive struggle where only those with the strongest moral character should survive, or else the society would weaken," close quote. This philosophy goes way back. John D. Rockefeller, for example, claimed that, quote, "the fortune he accumulated through the giant Standard Oil Trust was merely a survival of the fittest, the working out of a law of nature and a law of God," close quote. Reich goes on, quote, "The modern conservative movement has embraced social Darwinism. Social Darwinism gives a moral justification for rejecting social insurance and supporting tax cuts for the rich. In America, says Robert Bork, the rich are overwhelmingly people, entrepreneurs, small businessmen, corporate executives, doctors, lawyers, etc., who have gained their higher incomes through intelligence, imagination, and hard work. Close quote. And what's the upshot of all this? Reich concludes, quote, any transfer of wealth from rich to poor thereby undermines the nation's moral fiber. Allow the virtuous rich to keep more of their earnings and pay less in taxes, and they'll be even more virtuous. Give the non-virtuous poor food stamps, Medicaid, and what's left of welfare, and they'll fall into deeper moral torpor, close quote. And of course, also don't give them life support. Now you may be wondering, like I was, where were the Keep Terri Schiavo Alive fanatics? I love what Yucatan Man, blogging on Daily Coast, wrote. Quote, she wasn't white. Politicians did not speculate on her diagnosis via videotape. Conservative religious zealots did not picket the hospital. She didn't have insurance. Ventilator treatment is expensive. Baylor did not want to incur any more expenses, so they removed a conscious woman from a respirator. This is the true face of compassionate conservatism and of the phony culture of life. They don't give an expletive deleted as long as the insurance will pay the bill. No insurance? Goodbye, you die. Can you imagine what it must be like to know you are dying for 15 minutes? Every time some wingnut Republican politician trots out the phrase culture of life, remember Tirtahas Hatagidis. Reflect on a conscious person knowing that life-giving air was being cut off. End of Yucatan Man's blog. That's right. Excuse me, miss. We are going to smother you to death now by cutting off your air supply. What? You don't want us to? Sorry. We have the right to kill you now because of good old George W. Bush's law. I don't know how this popped into my head, but I had a fantasy. Imagine that George W. Bush sends an Air Force jet to Africa to pick up Ms. Hatagidis' mother. They waive all the visa requirements, etc., etc., and let her cradle her dying daughter in her arms, giving the daughter some solace as she slips into death. Imagine the political capital George W. Bush gains when he does that. Wake up, Jack, wake up. Back to the real Bush world. Remember the BTK killer, a serial psychopath? It was said that he mimicked his victim's protests as yada 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 when he was describing it. That brings to mind what George Bush did when facing the pleas for clemency of a woman scheduled to be executed in Texas. Her name was Carla Faye Tucker. The Pope and all kinds of other prominent people had asked Bush to spare her life, but he said no, she was going to be executed. And there was a report that Bush would, in a mocking tone, mimic her and say something like, oh, please, please, help me, don't kill me. Imagine a governor of a state mocking a prisoner who is pleading for clemency. It's not much of a stretch, is it? It's not much of a leap of imagination at all to imagine Bush, were he still governor, mocking this poor woman on a ventilator. No, please don't unplug me. Don't suffocate me.
She wanted to get her mom over here for her to get to her mom so she can die in her mom's arms.
No. Pull the plug. Cut off her air. Kill her. She's got no insurance to pay for this ventilator.
They handed me this letter on December 1st, and they said, we're going to give you 10 days,
right,
so that at the 11th day, they're going to pull it out. because she is not insured, and that was the major reason, the way I understood it.
It was against our will to unplug her. We never wanted that. If you don't have money in this country, you're nothing. You're not a human being.
It's a kind of a shock for me, too, to experience this in this country, whereas it's the richest country in the world. Very sad.
Yes, very sad. Very, very sad. This is the kind of country right-wingers want. This is the kind of world right-wingers want. I couldn't go to sleep after I read this story. This goes beyond anything I can imagine. It's cold-blooded, greed-motivated murder, plain and simple. In other words, the normal and customary behavior of the right wing. All right, that'll about wrap it up for today. If you think what you heard was worthwhile, please tell a friend about Blast the Right. Music credits. We opened the podcast with L.A. Nightmare by 22 Caliber. You can find them on music.podshow.com. The bumper music was Catapult the Propaganda by Nise Music, NISEmusic.com. And we'll close the podcast with a little bit of Taking My Country Back by Honky Tonkers for Truth. Links to that song, as well as to all the other music played on Blast the Right, can be found on my music resources page, which is linked to off the main podcast homepage. Also, links to the data resources I use can be found, appropriately enough, on my data resources page, which is, again, linked to off the main podcast homepage. Last podcast, I forgot to thank Tom Hartman for the clip of Rush Limbaugh, so I'm doing so now. Tom Hartman, probably the most brilliant and certainly the most knowledgeable talk show host. Check him out at tomhartman.com. I love to get comments from you, so please email me at rational@adelphia.net. And you can call in and leave comments for me to play on the podcast. If you use Skype, my Skype name is Jack from Blast the Right. If you're not on Skype, then just call 310-933-5891 and leave your comments. That's 310-933-5891. So, until next time, I'll sign off and say I love you all, including all you right-wing pieces of crap.
Now you don't this land.